Welcome back. Taxation is Theft. And I'm here today with Luis Fernando Mises. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here, man.
Yeah, no problem. Man, we were just talking, and you're into a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
let's talk a little bit about Emancipated Human, because you said that's your baby, and this really sounds interesting, especially with a lot of the things that we're seeing in terms of, you know, people protesting. You know, you mentioned like there's kind of like the angry protest, and then there's the peaceful protest. So why don't you kind of give me a little insight into that?
Yeah, totally. So, okay. We were talking a little bit about psychedelics, which, you know, I don't necessarily like to call them that, but entheogens. So I became an anarchist because of entheogens, basically like San Pedro Cactus. And whenever, like the very, very first time I did San Pedro, I, like after the journey was over, I went with my mentor, teacher, shaman, and I said, wait a minute, so Ron Paul is right? And he smiled. And he said, yeah, he's right. But we can't just do that like overnight. There's a lot of work that needs to happen. And, you know, and he explained a lot of things to me. And so from that moment on, like the light bulb came on. But, you know, it's an entire process. So like when I first realized like the nature of the state and all of these things, I was like, I need to do something. I don't know what I need to be doing. So I started contacting some of my friends. I'm like, we need to go lobby, you know, talk to our representatives and tell them, you know, they probably don't know and they can help, you know. That was the first instinct, because it's what I knew, that, you know, I mean, you work with what you have.
Right.
And then some of my friends were like not very interested and were like, yeah, we can do it. That sounds actually fun. You know, they know that I'm always impetuous and like, you know, I'm like, my brain only works in like I'm obsessed or I don't give a damn. Like there's no in between. So they were like, yeah, you know, crazy Louise. Yeah, whatever. So anyway, all that to say is like I kept learning, I kept reading, I kept doing, you know, ceremonies and learning more and reading a lot. And during an ayahuasca ceremony, like she told me that my mission was twofold, to be present and to do the homework. And basically like how the way she described the homework is to be able to empower people, to help them be their better selves. And by me doing that, I could inspire people to do that same thing. And so I came out, I was like, holy shit, that's big. You know, like I was able to see how it doesn't matter how high I went in my personal development. I could only go so far because there was the weight of the entire humanity that I was like needing to, like, you know, in the state of consciousness, if you will, we cannot just escape like that. So I was able to see how by empowering all the people, I could actually rise myself further up too, you know, like, I mean, the whole idea, the first will be the last and the last will be the first. And so I was like, holy smacks, that's pretty impressive. So, you know, Emancipated Human actually was not the first name that I came up with, as I was like, you know, looking on websites that were open, like Free Mind or whatever. And then like, I just sat and I was resting. I was like, I need a cool name that like is able to exemplify all of this that I've, and then it just clicked and I looked it up and it was free, like not being used. And I just bought it really quickly. So that's kind of how Emancipated Human came to be. And actually last week, I just, I mean, it's kind of funny, but yeah, I just made it a corporation. So I'm an LLC now. It's actually turning into something pretty cool.
Nice. Yeah. So there's man, so much you said there. And I think a lot of that's true, like, especially, you know, we have, there's, you know, like the tide rises all ships, right? You have so many people. And I think I kind of used to be in this trap too. Like, I remember when I was younger, I used to be like, yeah, you know, screw rich people. They have all these things that I don't have. And we should just take, you know, take what they have. And that's the mentality of bringing everybody else down to your level. But it sounds like, you know, as your, you know, where your journey is taking you is as you kind of rise up, you want to help everybody else rise up with you, because it's, you know, it's on some level, we're all connected with, you know, without, I know a lot of my viewers are going to be like, yeah, socialism, but you know, without going into that, we're all connected on some level. Whether we trade with each other, whether we exchange ideas, you know, we're all connected. And, you know, I've even heard people say, you know, they're all for public education because they don't want to be in a world surrounded by stupid people, which is, you know, admirable. But yeah, it's like that when people around you start getting smarter, and that's even one thing, you know, a lot of motivational speakers will say is surround yourself with people that you want to be like. And so if you're creating the environment, if you're helping to bring other people up, then other people will help to bring you up. And then we can all kind of rise further beyond, you know, what we could ever possibly do on our own.
So totally. Absolutely. I don't think we should fear that they're going to call us socialists, because it is a fact that everything that you do comes back at you. We are all interconnected. And this is like an awareness piece that goes from, you know, like me to us to all of us. And that's actually one of the tenets of conscious capitalism, that people, like when they get into a leadership position, it is at some point even expected of them to have a spiritual quotient. You know, like people can be smart and have like IQ and then emotional intelligence, but it's also the spiritual quotient that we are all connected or interdependent, that we are like in a sense one, you know. So I think that, you know, a lot of times whenever the socialist mentality says, you know, like you were saying, bring them down, they have all these things and we don't, well, that doesn't really help anybody, because in a sense, like you're not seeing the connectedness. So the socialist idea doesn't see how we are actually connected, and by wishing that harm onto others, it's coming back at us. So I mean, there's a lot of things, and yeah, like what you mentioned about the motivational speakers, and we are like, you know, the five people that we surround ourselves with. So it's pretty important to have that mentality of wanting to have around us people that are positive, even like, you know, those people that are sometimes annoying because they're always positive. Like those are the kinds of people that we need in our life anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny. Like there's, you know, I know there's a couple of people that I talk to all the time, and you know, it starts out where I'm giving them a little bit of advice, and it gets to the point where I'm just kind of pushing them, and they just get really irritated with me, and they're like, man, they're like, stop. And then, you know, usually they'll come back around a week later and they'll be like, yeah, you know what? You're right. Like it's a lot, because it's what's really interesting is like when you know, people don't like to be pushed, but at the same time, it's kind of like, and you know, I'm not perfect either, so I will say I'm sure I push people a little bit too hard sometimes, but you know, it's like we do need to be pushed, and what am I trying to say here? Small minds see problems as bigger than they are, but great minds see problems as much smaller. And as you gain experience with really anything, your mind grows. And, you know, like problems that you had before, like, you know, a problem that you had when you were 10, like, you know, someone took the video game and wouldn't let you play. Now, today, that problem is like not a big problem, not just because video games are nothing, but you know how to talk to someone and say, hey, let's figure out a way to work this where we can all play. Like there's, you know, whether it's saving up money to buy something or whatever it is, once we get experience, once someone pushes us or we push ourselves to learn how to solve those problems, then the next time those problems come up, or even similar problems, they're so much easier to solve.
Totally. And I think that taking that even further, talking about pushing, like in this also, you know, I was able to learn this through a psilocybin. I saw it, you know, a long time ago, like the whole idea that without the vicissitudes or the troubles that we go through, we really cannot ever see our true selves and where we're capable of, you know? So, you know, we may go through it and it's uncomfortable and it's shitty and we, you know, kick and piss and moan. But afterwards, we are stronger, wiser, freer, whatever it may be. And so, like, I don't like to see problems as problems, but they're just opportunities to connect with your will, with your inner force. So it's not that I'm looking for problems, but it's just like, you know, it's an opportunity. So what is this trying to teach me? What can I learn from this situation? So like everything is like the stories that you tell yourself about stuff that happens. You know, one of the things that we do with the executives that sometimes are maybe burned out. They're like, you know, we're doing all this work and you know, I work 80 hours a week and this shit and whatever. So what we tell them is, okay, tell me all your story, like your life story, as if you were a victim of it. And then they tell us their entire story. And then we say, okay, thank you for sharing. Now, tell me your entire life story as if you were the hero of that movie. So it's the same people, the same situations. All that changes is the focus that you put into it. And then they feel better about themselves. And they're like, yeah, you know, so it's reality is perception. Perception is reality. So how you see those problems, you know, in the beginning is what makes it or breaks it, you know. So there's a lot to be said about those opportunities.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, that's so true. And, you know, that's especially when we see, I think we see a lot in the political spectrum where people are complaining about what they don't have because other people have it. But it's usually like, it's usually over things that really don't matter. Like, you know, like, well, I mean, you know, we say money doesn't matter. And of course, we live in a world where if you really have none of it, then yeah, your life can be miserable. But the reality is it's not so much the money itself. It's, you know, what you can do to get it. And so a lot of people will kind of, you know, they'll sit there and say, I'm poor and this is the life that, you know, I've fallen into, when the reality is, you can do so much to shift your thinking and, you know, to become, you know, a person who's, I don't want to say a value, because that kind of implies that you don't have a value, but to become, I mean, I guess you could say that, because as you become a person of value to your community, money just kind of attracts to you and you no longer become poor. And what a lot of people do is they like to kind of cut themselves off from, you know, from the other side of the world. And that kind of forces them into this mentality of poverty. Like one really great story that shifted my thinking, you know, was a long time ago. Somebody told me, like, when you see somebody with a really nice car, you know, a lot of people who have less would look at that and say, man, screw that guy and screw his car. And he didn't work for that. And he got it too easy and all this other stuff. And instead shift your thinking to, when you see someone with a really nice car, go up to him and say, hey, that's a really nice car. How do you like it? To ask him questions about it. You know, and that sort of thing. And when you do that, you open yourself to be surrounded by, you know, people who are, you know, let's say more positive. And, you know, the reason people have these things is because, you know, they're positive. I know a lot of people say, like, no, it's because of capitalism and they're stealing from each other. But it really is. And there might be some of those people, but there's also positivity. And when you're a positive person that other people enjoy being around, people enjoy giving you money and trading with you. And this is how you grow. And when you shut yourself off from the rest of the world that's doing this, you're kind of forcing yourself into a negative community of negative people. And I think that's kind of where the you know, the poverty comes. Now, don't get me wrong. I know, you know, I spend a lot of time talking about how, you know, government creates these systems that drain us, and there's really no escape from it. But I think a lot of it is kind of our own choice. In that way, like, you know, who we surround ourselves with, there is a way out. And yes, we're always going to be feeding the government. They're always going to be stealing from us, but if we can figure our way out of it, in spite of all these challenges, then we're going to be on a much better path.
Oh, absolutely. And I do think that we actually have the government that we deserve. So, you know, that sounds horrible, but that's what we're getting, because we either don't apply ourselves into it, we're voting for the lesser of two evils, when in reality, both are evil. And so there's a lot to be said on that, you know, government stance. Basically, it's our fault. And on the other side, what you mentioned is like the person that has good results in life, that anybody that is doing that on a voluntary basis, it means that they provided enough value to be able to get that back on them. So, you know, what I suggest is that people find mentors. You don't have to reinvent the wheel at all. And this is one of the coaching tips that we give, is like, go find somebody that you like, that has the results in life that you want, and copy what they do. And you will see that many times those people tend to be very loving, very open, and they're willing to teach you things. Like, I mean, shit, like, what was it? Last week, I interviewed Howard Behar, which was the president of Starbucks. And wow. And that happened because now he's my mentor. I mean, nice. You know, like, people are just willing to give you things if you're wanting to use them for the right things. So, I mean, how many people can say that, you know, like, that they're being mentored by a guy that, you know, went from 26 stores to 15,000 stores because of him, you know? So that happens, and it's not like something magical, or it's not something that, like, oh, you know, it's because you're special. No, like, I mean, I'm an immigrant, and I'm a college dropout, and I have an accent, you know? So if I can do it, shit. Like, people that are born here and with all the, you know, they have it much easier than I had it. So all I'm saying is that it's all here in the stories that we tell ourselves. And like you said, you know, being able to appreciate what somebody has and try to emulate that. And again, like, there's this anti-business rhetoric that if people are rich, it's because they stole from somebody. And that's actually very rarely the case, you know, unless they work in government or they have some form of a government contract.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Something you just gave me a thought and I lost it. That happens all the time. But yeah, it really is true. Like, you know, people bank on their college degree as, you know, that's going to be their career. And of course that's, you know, but here's the thing, like, somebody sold you that degree, right? Like, the same way somebody sells you a car, they're going to sell you a car. They're going to say, this is the best car. Eventually that car is going to break down. You're going to try to resell it. It's not going to be worth what it, you know, they're going to tell you, oh yeah, you can resell this car a year later for twice what it's worth. It's a sales pitch, right? And it really is the same thing with college education. Like, they're trying to sell you on a diploma. The reality is, like, colleges used to be a place where, well, I don't want to say only this, but, like, you know, especially in specific fields, people, you know, like, let's say computer science, because that's what I'm into. People who were really smart with computers would want to go to these colleges to refine those skills. It wasn't even so much about getting a degree to go work, you know, in a corporation. It was a bunch of smart people coming together to share and collaborate and do all these ideas. And the bar to getting into a good college was always, you know, what do your grades look like? What's your intelligence level? We want the smartest people who actually are really, really interested in these subjects to get into this college. And it has become, we'll teach you whatever you want to learn. Just give us money and we'll give you a piece of paper at the end. So it's kind of like we're doing it for the wrong reason, and someone's taken it and said, you know, let's market it. Now, not to say that you won't learn anything, but it really is an overpriced, education system, especially like you're saying, you have mentors. There's so many things you can do in this world just by, you know, getting a job at a lower level, and but not getting the job to get a paycheck, getting it to learn and to grow yourself and learn all these different things. And there's, you can do so much better like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, another mentor that I was pretty excited to have was Doug Casey. Doug Casey is like,
oh, I
freaking
know him.
Oh my gosh, like, I love that man so much.
Awesome.
And he tells me that he actually doesn't hire people if they have degrees for the business that he does. He says, if you're dumb enough to pay for an MBA, you cannot manage money. So I'm not going to hire you. And, you know, that's what they do, investments and whatever.
Right.
So, like, I mean, he hires, you know, geologists and you know, all that kind of stuff that are actually useful. And so what he says about, like, college education is that it's overpriced babysitting. And what that is like, you're paying a bunch of money for something that you can learn in your house for pennies. And, you know,
absolutely,
like, college is, it's mainly for, like, high science that, like, you cannot buy a lab. I mean, unless you're, like, super rich. But,
right,
you know, like, for things that, like, medicine and stuff like that. Otherwise, you know, you're just wasting your money and your time. So, and like, I think it's super important, you know, what you mentioned, not working just for the money. Like, money, I don't think, I mean, I like money. I enjoy generating a good income. It makes me happy. But it's not all that, like, I mean, at the end of the day, you can count your dollars alone, and that doesn't make you happy. So,
right,
you know, it's I think, about the value that you provide and the lives that you improve and the people that you grow as you grow yourself. So, like, you know, I always like to say that there are three kinds of ways to make money. And the first one is the job. Everybody hates their fucking jobs. You know, like, oh, I hate Mondays. No, you don't hate Mondays. You hate your life. You know, so then the second one is a career. People prepare themselves. They go to school. It's you know, like a race. And then, but at the end of it, they see themselves on the beach sipping on martinis at 65. You know, I got the big house. I got the fancy cars and the beach property. I won, you know. There's nothing wrong with that one, but I think there's more than that. Like, Joseph Campbell said that midlife crisis is when you get to the top of the ladder and you realize that is the wrong ladder. Then moving to the third one is calling. What moves you? Like, even if you didn't make a lot of money, you would want to do it. Howard Behar tells me that his dad, he says, my dad said he doesn't have customers. He has friends. And I think that mentality is just exquisite. Like, you don't see people just as a dollar sign here. You see them as, I have this product and you will find value in it. Here it is. And in return, they give you money. And, you know, there's times that, like, in my business, I also sell kratom. I import it from Indonesia. And there's times that just, you know, people don't have it and they've lost their jobs because of heroin addiction or whatever. I help them out, you know? And it's not always just about the money. But you have to make sure that you make enough to where you're safe and your family has enough food, you know? So, like, those things. And then you're able to help people. So then, like, I was telling you, the third one is the calling. Stuff that just, like, it's in your DNA once you're awake, once you're self-actualized. And you're like, this is the stuff that wakes me up in the mornings. You know, I'm changing the world. And you can change the world by mopping the floor. Or you can change the world by being Elon Musk. Like, I mean, not everybody gets to do the cool stuff that he does, but that doesn't mean that we don't get to change the world if we are awake and in a sense of self-actualization. So it's pretty important that, you know, a lot of people say, no, that's bullshit. Not everybody has a purpose. And I just, like, tell them, you know, you're just afraid because you haven't found it and you feel like you may not have one, but there is one. So, you know, I work with people in that sense, and it's like, what turns you on, you know, like, and that's what you need to go after.
Yeah, I think I've, you know, a lot of people talk about purpose, and to me, it's always been, purpose is not, it's not there, and it's like, it's not, you know, some people say God gives you a purpose. I don't believe in that. Some people say I don't have a purpose. I believe that's temporary. I see it as you can have a purpose. You just have to accept the fact that you can have a purpose. And then you have to just explore the world until you find it. And, you know, like, go get a bunch of different jobs, go travel and explore, go meet new people, go outside of your comfort zone, and you will find a purpose. And you know, you, and once you see it and recognize it, that's, I mean, man, you're going to love it, and you're just going to want to spend all your time on it. But if you kind of hide from it and say, you know, oh, I don't have, you know, like you were saying, I don't have a purpose, I don't believe in that, you're going to kind of shut yourself off from the rest of the world. You're not going to be observing, and you know, when something does come by, you're not going to see it, and you're not going to take hold of it.
Totally.
It's really a shame.
And there's something that Simon Sinek says, that Simon says, that's funny. not like, you know, the whole idea of not everybody has purpose. Like, maybe it's not your own personal mission, but it is okay that you see somebody else's purpose and vision and mission, and you follow that and feel it. That is valid as well.
Yeah, share it with them. Partnerships. I mean, you look at some of the great things that have been done, and you know, they're not done alone. There's even if it's race cars, nobody wins the race on their own. There are, you know, a lot of people that participate in that with different areas of expertise. And if you don't have an area of expertise, it's never too late to learn it. I'm always teaching. It's funny. So I'm a software engineer, and people are always, you know, asking me, hey, how can I hack, or how can I write a website, or, you know, stuff. And, you know, like you said, like people just like to share, and I love sharing and teaching people. Not everybody, you know, not everybody gets into it and sticks onto it for that long, but it's great to to share these experiences with people and see what they come up with, and see what they can do. And that's part of the fun of sharing knowledge and experiences with people. Like you were saying, like, people who have a lot, they're willing to share it. But I think at the same time, you know, they can be protective of people who want what they have kind of for the wrong reasons, or without, you know, without creating some form of symbiosis where you can both be, you know, benefit each other.
Totally. I mean, you know, there's enough charity that you can give, but there's a point where you're like, well, you know, I mean, there's only so much giving that you can do. So you cannot save like everybody. Like, that's the whole idea why socialism doesn't work. You cannot just, you know, give somebody else's money to fix something. Like, there's gotta be, like, the universe works in Austrian economics. You know, like, you cannot have vacuums. Like, the universe abhors a vacuum. So, like, you have to have something for something else. So, like, an exchange of energy of sorts. But yeah, I mean, there is certain giving that if after mentioning this, you get 25 people asking you how to build websites, you cannot, you know, just mentor every single person. Right. Maybe you can say, you know, okay, I can start, because there's so much demand, I can start a program, and you can record videos, and, you know, you have them pay $20 or whatever. So even then, you're still giving a service to humanity, because there's a demand. Absolutely. There's a need.
Absolutely.
And you get something for your time, because you're being taken away from, you know, your family or whatever.
Absolutely. So let's shift gears a little bit, because you mentioned Kratom, and I've been hearing a lot about this lately. I don't know too much about it. What's the deal with that?
Well, about 3.5 years ago, I got a brown recluse bite on my leg, and it didn't cause any necrosis. Like, I didn't lose my limb or anything. But it, like, really fucked me up on my energy level and in my nervous system, to where, like, on my entire left side, like, I, you know, driving, I could not just drive with my left hand, because, like, it took so much energy. Like, my arm was like, ugh. So, I mean, it was hard. So one of my friends actually was selling Kratom, and he told me about it. He sent me some, and that gave me energy, and it gave me, like, I felt happier. So I started taking it, you know, because, I mean, my wife shut down her practice so she could homeschool our kids. And my part of the deal was I was going to pick up more money that, like, generate more income that she was not going to make anymore. So shit, like I can't just, you know, not work. So I started taking kratom, and, you know, for a year or so. And then I saw that the government was trying to ban it. And then I was like, well, knowing that 99% of my friends are anarchists, I'm going to just start selling it because, you know, if the government's against it, these guys are going to be for it. So, you know, I just bought like 10 kilos. And I mean, I had done all the legwork in Indonesia trying to see which one was a good provider. I found one. And anyway, so I just put it online. I'm like, hey, you know, I have some. And like, it sold out like in a week. And I was like, wow. So wow. I just started buying more and importing it. And like, I have some extracts. Like, the guy that brought Kratom into the States about 30 years ago, he's also a mentor of mine. And he gives me my extracts to sell. Like, I buy it from him and I resell it here wholesale. And then we make a liquid extract. So like, the whole idea that I researched was that the family that owns the patent for hydrocodone is lobbying the state to make kratom illegal so they can use that same blueprint of sorts and use it. Okay, so that's actually quite nefarious. So that's the whole deal of why the FDA is trying to put it on Schedule 1 for a little bit while they're doing some research. You know, that's bullshit.
Right.
So anyway, we are fighting. And this is interesting because Coinbase shut me down for selling Kratom. PayPal froze my money and shut me down too. Freaking Square. Like, I used Square for like, I don't know, maybe 8 months to a year. And finally, they caught up and they shut me down. Who else? Chase Bank, the merchant services, they did too. So ultimately, like, it's fully legal, but it's such a gray area that, you know, because of that, like, I've helped dozens of people get off of opiate addictions with Kratom. I've helped tons and tons of people that are, like, in really harsh pain management and all that stuff, you know, that are super expensive with Kratom. And I mean, you cannot even imagine, like, people with heroin addictions, all sorts of things. This stuff is amazing. And it also, like, gives people energy and euphoria. So all sorts of wonderful things. And it's just as addictive as coffee. So, you know, you're not really going to, like, it's not as, you know, it's like a lot of people give me shit because they're like, oh, you know, you're just taking one substance for the other. No, it's not true. It's not the same. It's not an opiate. It goes with your pain receptors and it kind of does some massaging of sorts, so you know it works divinely. So yeah, I mean, it's under attack and it continues to be under attack, and you know, like, cannabis went through the same route. Now right. We're finally gaining some ground on it, but they're selling it to us, they're selling us the permits. Now there can only be so many dispensaries and you can sell it at so much only, and you know, there's so much red tape. So I don't want Kratom to go through the same thing, so we're fighting.
What is it made out of? Is it basically plant extract or?
Well, it's a shrubbery. It's a cousin from the coffee plant. So it's leaves basically. And they've been using it since, I don't know, the late 1700s, early 1800s in the Ring of Fire, you know, Southeast Asia. And to treat, I don't know, a lot of things. And it used to be only green kratom. Kratom was just green. And actually, I still have a little stash from the original stuff that was the original Mengda that, you know, it's a misnomer these days because everything's fucking Mengda and they really isn't. So it's just like a coffee plant kind of related. And you know how coffee makes you feel good and happy and alert and all of that. Yeah. So imagine that, but stronger. And I mean, if I have some here, I can show it to you. I don't. But anyway, it's quite amazing. So and it's completely natural and it's beautiful. And then the extracts, like what it is the liquid extract that my business partner does, like they extract it with, you know, all food grade material ingredients and no shits and nothing. And like we get like 75 milligrams per milliliter. So it's like, I mean, stuff that you will never be able to find anywhere else because this guy has mastered his trade. And then the other guy that sells it to me, the guy that brought it from here to the States a long time ago, like what he does is like he uses a white vein and he basically enhances plant material with extract. So this stuff is like for people that have high tolerance, high pain or, you know, whatever. So, I mean, it's amazing stuff.
Awesome. Yeah, that's I guess I don't know. I got a lot of things on my list to try, and I think the circles I'm usually in don't have the good stuff. So, but that's on my list.
Yeah, and like actually, one of my friends slash customers, because I started shipping also to Chile. The guy works at a university, so one of my friends moved to Chile. And he connected me with this guy in the university, and he got some from me. And he did a test because he was actually prejudiced against Indonesians because he always got screwed over, or you know, with some shitty product. And I'm like, no. I did legwork for many years. This guy's a bomb. So he works at the lab. He's a scientist. He did the tests, and it has no bacteria, and it has no fungus, and it has it's clean, and it has no additives, because a lot of times they add green tea, and you know, there was a scare about E. coli, and which I think it's the government tampering with some stuff, quite honestly. So I mean, this stuff is not just powerful, but it's clean. So I mean, I like to say that I have the best kratom you will ever try.
Awesome. You ship to Mexico?
You know, Jeff Berwick buys from me, but I don't ship it because they've actually, like, the government has stolen some of my stuff. Like, FedEx sends it, but once it gets to customs, it just stays stuck there. So these guys probably have houses full of Pete's stuff that people send, you know, from one country to the other. Oh,
yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's interesting. I've had some stuff shipped here, like, you know, anything from, like, taxation as theft hats to car parts and some of the stuff just goes missing, especially if you use like the regular post office here. It's not that great, especially without a tracking number even.
You're in Mexico?
Yeah, I'm down in Tulum. Near Cancun.
Well, next time I go to Mexico, I will bring some and just ship it to you while I'm there, so like estafeta or something.
Okay,
like
cool.
That.
I'll I don't know. It sounds like, you know, so I go up to the, I'm always back and forth actually, but what's interesting is like I'm always worried about bringing stuff over the border even if it's legal, because you know, kind of like what you said, you know, is if you know, I don't know if you know the police or anything down here, sometimes they'll make a big deal out of nothing, but for the most part I've, you know, I haven't had any issues. I'm just always kind of I'm paranoid because since I was a kid I was always getting busted for things I didn't do. So
that's funny.
So yeah, I'm just like super paranoid about, you know, even doing something that's legal, which totally sucks, and that's an effect of the state, and it's like a, you know, it's just a mental block I have on myself, but whatever.
Yeah, so. I mean, I am from Mexico, so I understand. And, you know, most of the time, like, shit, like, okay, so my dad at some point had a contract with the state, and he was refurbishing transmissions for heavy machinery. So we had some connections, and one time I think I was like, I don't know, 13 or something, I started driving his truck, and I got pulled over. And somebody told him, so he came out of the house, and the cop was like, you know, license, registration. I was like, I don't have a license. And I gave him the registration. And so my dad comes out. He just snatched the registration out of the cop's hand, put it back in the car, shut the car, locked it, and went and walked back inside the house. And I was just like, damn. And I just kind of like, all right, see ya. Yeah. So from then, you know, like I just learned that I basically could do whatever the hell I wanted. And obviously, as long as I don't hurt any other people. But, you know, like, I've done, you just, you know, hand them, like, 200 pesos and you're free. You have to be, you know, make friends with corruption.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've you know, I've said this before. Like, what I notice a lot down here is there's really, like, part of it's because it's not so bureaucratic, and part of it's because the cops want to keep the money for themselves, so they'd rather take the money than write you a ticket and give the money to the state. But like there's not, like, when I get stopped by the cops out here, there's not like this like fear or this terror like you have when you get stopped in the US, because they're like, in the US they already have their hands on the gun, they're, you know, they're trained to, like, you know, treat you like you know, you've got warrants and you're going to jump out shooting and all this other stuff. And it's like, you know, but with the Mexican cops, it's just kind of like, you know, they're like, oh yeah, you know, you did something. We're going to give you a ticket or take some of your money or whatever. But even if you refuse, even if you fight them on it, they're not going to try to kill you in most cases anyway. It's, you know, I think that's a pretty interesting distinction. And I think also what's really cool about, down here is, you know, there are so many people that you get a cease and desist notice stuck on your house. You're not allowed to build anymore because you don't have a permit. And people just like, who the hell are you? I'm going to keep building. You know, it's like the people are, in general, I think more free and more understanding that government is just some organization trying to take you for what you've got. And you know, we don't have to listen to them. They have their authority comes from us obeying, and if we refuse to obey, then they have no authority, they have no power.
Yeah, totally. It's, you know, it's very different. Like here you're a threat whether you are or you're not, you know.
Yeah,
so it's very different than over there in Mexico. So yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. So you do a lot of speaking and consulting too, right? What kind of stuff are you into there?
Well, I like to say that I teach volunteerism in the corporate world, and that's actually not far from the truth. We focus on servant leadership, and we do leadership development for, you know, mainly executives, but we also do middle managers, supervisors, and in some cases we go to like line workers, some clients that are like legacy clients that have been doing it for a long time. So what we do is, you know, normally like people like in any, I guess, organization, there's a pyramid of power with the boss on top of it. And then he or she yells orders at everybody, and they have, you know, division and shares it with everybody. And then, you know, there's ranks and hierarchy, and then the people at the very bottom there, you know. So imagine like, you know, the worst case bureaucracy of, you know, so that's the normal mentality of businesses once they get pretty big. So what we do is we help them transform that pyramid upside down. And what happens is we help everybody see, we take the veil off their eyes and let them see that the supervisor or the boss is actually supposed to be a mentor and a remover of obstacles. So if you hire somebody, it's because you think that they know what to do, right? So you're not going to have to be micromanaging them. So because when you're doing that as a supervisor, like you never get to do your work because you're having to do the work. But in reality, they can do it, you know? And so what we do is we help them change their mindset on what their roles are. And like what Howard Behar always says is like, it's not about the coffee, it's about people. Like when I go to Starbucks, like they know my name, they know how I like my stuff. Like, you know, sometimes they don't even charge me because I just get black coffee, which is $2. And so like the whole idea is like, we take care of like customers, not first for us as supervisors, first is the line worker. So when you really take care of them, like they give them benefits, even for part-time people, you know, all sorts of good things. So once they feel like they are actually appreciated and loved and taken care of, they're going to do excellent work because they don't have to worry about like losing their job or whatever. So like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, there's one that's security. If they don't feel secure, they cannot go to the second or the next rank because they're afraid. So if you make them feel secure, they can, you know, do much better work. And you as a supervisor get to do higher level thinking, like, you know, strategizing or whatever it is that your position allows it to be. So, you know, and that actually makes everybody happier and everybody makes more money. And then, you know, I mean, we succeed by doing that. So there was one CEO that we were, you know, helped us with some things. And he said, you know, it's really difficult when you're the leader at a nonprofit because you're not paying them, right? So to get them to do things, you have to be really persuasive because all of those guys are volunteers, right? Right. Okay, so now imagine you as a supervisor, all of these guys that work with you, they're actually volunteers too because they could be working somewhere else. So you don't need to treat them like you own them. They're volunteers. They can go somewhere else. So treat them right. Be persuasive. Be nice. And all of these things are parallel to peaceful parenting. You know, we need to treat our kids like people, not fucking property. So there's a lot of perils in this voluntarist ideology that we teach and shit. Like, I mean, a lot of people are changing, and it's exciting to see how all that is evolving.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. And man, so many, like, because I know there's a lot of people who, you know, well, for one thing, they'll complain about minimum wage, which is fair. It's a shitty wage. But, you know, kind of like what you were just saying about, it's voluntary. You're there voluntarily. And yeah, we could talk about, you know, all the force in the marketplace that forces you to have a job because, you know, you got to, at the end of the day, you got to pay some sort of tax to the government just to survive. But you are there voluntarily, and you can always say, you know what, this job doesn't pay. I'm going to quit. I'm going to go find something else. And, you know, a lot of people say, yeah, but that depends on the market. And sure, there's always that, but there's always, you can be productive and find a way to provide a new service to other people. You know, start your own business. And I think once you realize how that all is really, you know, voluntary, then you can really kind of advance yourself. You're no longer stuck in this, I need a job. You know, especially, you know, I just need a job, any job, because that's how you end up in those places that pay the minimum wage.
Yeah. It actually empowers people to realize that they're volunteers in the workplace. And another thing that, like, actually, it's a pet peeve of mine. Like, I see a lot of people posting on Facebook that, oh, I wish we didn't have jobs. And, like, I mean, what the fuck are you going to do? Like, you're going to pick up apples and make your house out of mud and sticks, really? I mean, that's even more arduous than, like, having to go to a job. So, like, I don't want to have to do that personally. And they're like, oh, yeah, I know what you mean. Like, but, like, people just don't think things through. Like, sure, right. But, nature is predatory, you know, by design. If you, like, you have to have shelter, you have to have food, you have to have a form of security. Like, I mean, that stuff is freaking troglodyte, you know? Like, we're going to be back to Neanderthals if we just do that. Like, you know, I mean, I kind of enjoy waking up in a secure place with a comfortable bed and being able to just drink watermelon water out of a bottle instead of having to, like, grow 17 vines so I can get one that works.
Absolutely.
We have to work anyway, so might as well do something that we like. So once you emancipate yourself and realize that you are going to have to work anyway, might as well do something you like, and you're a volunteer, you have power. So you can be a co-creator of this 3D reality that we have instead of just being a passive, character in the play of consciousness.
Right. And I think that kind of comes back to purpose too. Like once you figure out, you know, that once you figure out what your purpose is, then you can really focus on that and figure out how to create a benefit for humanity. And that totally gets, and in doing that, money comes your way. You can stop thinking about, a job and all this other stuff. And you just become so much more productive. And you, like, the problems all kind of solve themselves. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that's so true. And again, like, you don't really have to, like, your motivation, of course, you know, like, there's some studies that say, you know, like, after $50,000, you start, like, not thinking about money once you reach that, you know, kind of almost weird number. I don't know how they came up with it. But, you know, you have certain security, again, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Then you can focus on, like, your purpose. So, like, yeah, it's important. Like, I mean, I started scrubbing bathrooms, you know? Like, I mean, we all have to start somewhere. And if we're afraid of work, then we're not going to get shit done. So, like, if you're hungry enough, stuff is just things that you need to do. And it's like life, you know? So I don't think we need to be afraid of that. And we just have to take life by the horns. And that's a thing that, like, one of the things that people are just like, oh, you know, that's hard. Or, like, no, I mean, like, number one, be patient with yourself. Like, things take time. And number two, don't fool yourself, and no, life is never going to be perfect, and you cannot wait until you have all your money saved up and all your ducks in a row. You have to just fucking jump and start doing stuff now, you know, whatever it is. Like, there's a difference between like wishful thinking and actually like a goal. Like, you have a goal, here it is, and then you have to make steps to get to that goal. So otherwise it's just like mental masturbation of things that you would like to do that will never show up in your life, you know.
Absolutely. And you know, to that effect, start and fail. And like, even, you know, if you get, if you get 2 inches into running a mile on whatever, whatever your goal is, you've got an extra 2 inches of experience, and you can take that, you'll find another goal. You know, maybe, or maybe you'll just keep working at it. Maybe you'll, you know, it'll take you longer, but you'll learn and you'll keep getting, or maybe you'll say, hey, this, I like this other goal that, you know, that's better. That's like, man, this whole thing, this whole journey for me started out with, you know, trying to figure out how to not pay traffic tickets. And it, it turned into something so much bigger as I, you know, I talked to more people and expanded my mind and saw, you know, what types of other things were in this world. And it's, you know, really anything you do, you just have to get your mind out of that box of, you know, stop thinking about your job. That's another thing. Like, so many people, they put like their job is like the most important thing that they have. And it's like, stop thinking like that. When you get home from your job, do something. It doesn't matter what it is. Go out in the world and see what it is and find, find something that can replace your job, because I can guarantee you, if you look hard enough, there's going to be something there.
I love that. That's so funny. I don't know why it made me laugh. I have a client and his name is Bob, and he says, like, dude is a business unit manager. Like, you know, the next step is C-level stuff. And he says, I'm always training my replacement. Like, I mean, just that mentality in itself, you know, a lot of people's like, I'm going to guard knowledge so they don't get my position. And he says, fuck it. You have to give it to people, because if you need to move up, who's going to, like, you're never going to move up there if there's not somebody here to catch your spot. So just give, you know, like, I mean, that, that's the Absolutely. Whole idea of like the virtuous cycle of abundance mentality. Like, I mean, I grew up like, okay, so my wife always tells me, she says, you know, your childhood is kind of rare because of like your parents, you know, like how I was raised. And like, these guys used to buy like new set of like living rooms, you know, like sofa and whatever, like every, I don't know, 3 years, and they will give it away, like the old stuff. Like, so like, these guys were like so giving all the time. And so like, you know, even when we were like dirt poor, I was like so giving and always happy, because that's like the operative system, since you're like an engineer, like that was my operative system in my mind. And that stuff works so amazingly, like whenever you're actualizing life, because as you're like giving out, like life's a boomerang, the more like what you throw out comes back at you. So as you're like adding value in people's lives, they just like want to do the same for you. So, I mean, it's just like so fantastic how that works.
Yeah, it totally is. There's, man, something you just said reminded me of a quote, from somebody was asking, you know, they had some employees and they were asking, like, you know, the other executive, should we really invest all this money in training these employees? Because what if we train them and they leave? And the response was, well, what if you don't train them and they stay? And it's, I mean, yeah, it's exactly like what you said.
Yeah. And, you know, that's one thing that, again, like having to remove that toxic tumor from our operative system of just hoarding, you know, like, you know, and it goes also for relationships. Like, there's, you know, one person that we know, like, wants to keep their wife like submissive and lesser than, and I'm like, why do you even do that to yourself? Like, in my mind, I want an equal, you know, so we both are looking in the same direction, going through life together, instead of like, you know, or like people that like parents, like, you know, I'm always going to be the parent, always right, always like smarter, you know, like the elder, like, fuck that. That means that the children are going to be over here. And if they keep that mentality, the children of these ones are going to be here. So we're going to be going in reverse.
Right.
And we're going to be like dumbing ourselves down to a point of like fucking like, what is that movie? Idiocracy.
Oh, Idiocracy, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, instead, it really is. So I kind of had a weird way of looking at, I guess, so because I'm like so computer minded, right? I have this like, this way of looking at kids as if, so I used to buy a new computer and then I would transfer all of my old software into the new one, but selectively. I'd leave all the garbage that I didn't want anymore, update whatever. Now I've got new hardware with all of the information and everything that I had on it. And I kind of see, I don't have any kids, but that's kind of the way I've always seen having kids. You're kind of reproducing yourself into new hardware, and now it's your job to fill that hardware up with all the you know, give them all the good information that you have. You can leave out the bad stuff, but you want them to be better and smarter and faster and, you know, everything else, because that's kind of the whole point. Like, it's progression of the species, but it's develop further. You spend your entire life, or you should spend your entire life trying to grow and become smarter and everything else. Why not pass that on to your kids? As you know, your one physical body is only going to last for this small piece of timeline, whereas the entire human species is going to be this long. Let's help to make the entire progression, because we're all playing a part in that. Let's help to make the entire progression, continue getting better, as you know, as far down as that goes.
Oh, heck yeah, absolutely. Like, one of the things that our older clients focus on is their legacy. And you know, I'm giving this out to probably a younger generation. Like, focus on your legacy. What are you going to leave behind? You know, like, a lot of people are just focused on themselves and whatever they can achieve. But in reality, like, it's your legacy that's going to speak about you, your kids, you know, and their kids, and just world in general. Like, I mean, I have like ideas, probably maybe crazy, but I want to leave a library behind, parks with my name, you know, like to be able to contribute to society in a way that, like, I make people's lives better, you know, like a contribution to humanity. That, I mean, just those kinds of things, like, they're not just like your individual thing. And I'm not saying that just thinking about yourself is a bad thing, but I'm saying that it's not enough. We're not here just to think about ourselves. You know, if that was the case, we are pack animals, you know? So, and we are interconnected, as we were saying at the beginning. So, I think like life is about reducing, suffering for people. And especially for those of us that are in that level of self-actualization, you see life for what it is, which is a shit show. So you might as well try to use your energy into lessening the suffering of others.
Absolutely. And so actually, there's this, I guess I see like a lot of people are afraid of death, and this was like something that I kind of like, I had some my great grandmother died when I was very young, so I had that, you know, discussion of what is death when I was like, I don't know, three or something, and like, so I've kind of been, you know, I went through phases where like I'm just like, okay, I'm not even afraid of death. And I think so many people are, and I think that's why, like, you know, the healthcare is such a big issue with people. Like, people are always so worried. Oh, what if I get sick? You know, you're gonna die at some point. That's kind of how life works. And if you spend, like, I feel like a lot of people, you know, they try and hold on to everything that they have and never let anything go. And that's how you end up with people who are kind of like hoarders, but then you also end up with people who are kind of like, you know, whether they're hoarding like property or money or this other stuff, if that's kind of how you focus, it's almost like you're concentrating on your fears of losing something instead of just enjoying the time and space that you're in. And I think that really is kind of detrimental, whereas when you're creating, you're enjoying, you're like, you're on the edge, you're not afraid, you're not living in fear, you're expanding, you're doing amazing things. But when you're living in fear, which, you know, and a lot of people will sell you fear, they should tell you a million reasons you should be afraid. And you really got to figure out how to block that stuff out, because that's, you know, that's how they control you. What was the, you know, the story of your enslavement? They teach you fear because humans can be controlled with fear, unlike any other animal.
Totally. Yeah. And I think you mentioned something, like a lot of things that were pretty cool, but yeah. So like the whole idea of the fear of death, there was like a time where, like, after, you know, a shamanic ceremony where, like, I saw zoomed out and saw like the process of life and how all of that, I was like so afraid of just going to sleep, because I'm like afraid of dying. Cause I just saw like how like meaningless everything was. And I just wanted to hold on to my consciousness. And I mean, again, I was just afraid. And so there was a part of me after continuing the journey, which, you know, like there's a quote from the Buddha that says that there's only two mistakes that you can make in the journey: not starting and not going all the way. So there was a point where I actually started, like when you're in entheogens, there's a part of you that simulates death. And so I was starting to move into the veils and like learning how to move in the other side, and just really realizing that it was okay, because this physical reality is not all there is. And I think that that's one of the most important things that we can learn, is that if we really are cognitively and atomically aware that this is not it, then there is no death. Like the body will like recycle, just like, you know, you finish your bottle, put it into recycling, and they, you know, turn it into something else, like a toothbrush or whatever, you know. So like there's never this end, and you'll be fine, you know. Like, yeah, I mean, I lost my dad when I was 16, and I miss him, right? So there is that aspect. But like when you are truly connected and aware, there is no real death, so you can do a lot more things. And there's always, like, I mean, I don't think that I will ever get rid of certain fears. Like, I'm terrified of heights. I you know, I'm afraid of a lot of things. But like, even, I don't know, I've been speaking for 12 years, and every single time whenever I'm about to present, I'm about to shit my pants when I'm like, you know, behind the scenes. And like once I put, you know, step on the stage, like everything just dissipates. I'm in flow. And that flow is what I help people also connect with. Because when you're in flow, like the deed and the doer connect, and it's so freaking crazy. But it's like something that like the world disappears. You're just like this vortex of energy. Like, you know, like I think before I used to use it at work, when I was in the varsity basketball team, like that shit, like outside of the court, the basketball court, there was nothing. Like everything looked gray, I swear to God. And like a lot of people could actually like understand what I'm talking about when this flow happens. So once you're in there, like it, nothing really matters. It's just like the activity, and you can even anticipate movements of people. Like you move through like space-time continuum a little bit, and like that shit is like, that's why like all of these basketball players and all these guys are like so fantastic at what they do, because they connect to that. Same thing, like, I don't know, Tiger Woods, all of these high performing people. So like the idea of flow is something that is extremely interesting, and I would love to invite people to connect with.
Awesome. Well, we've been on for about an hour here, so I want to wrap this up, but I definitely want to have you back, because there's a lot of really cool things you have to talk about. Before we go, are there any websites, Emancipated Human, anything else you want to plug?
Yeah, thank you. Sure. EmancipatedHuman.com, that's the baby. And, you know, I actually had a page, Emancipated Human, on Facebook, but it got hijacked. I was reaching about 2 million people a week. I had over 75,000 likes. Went to shit. So just Luis Fernando Mises on Facebook, find me. I'm kind of shy, I guess introverted, but I'm friendly. And, you know, if I go speak places just because of the shyness, you know, I may not approach a lot of people, but feel free to approach and talk, and we'll be friends.
Yeah, I second that. I'm I'm, you know, what's funny is I think a lot of libertarians and anarchists are actually pretty introverted. But what's funny is like when, once we figure out how to get connected, like we can just talk with so many different people on so many different subjects. And there's really like, when you see a person and you think like, I know a lot of people play this game, like, oh, I can guess what this person is. But it's like, when you go talk to them, like, it goes deep. It doesn't matter, you know, it doesn't matter who they are. If it's just some random person on the bus, like there's deep stuff in every person. So yeah, don't be afraid to talk to someone.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And yeah, I'll be happy to be back whenever, you know, we have some time.
Awesome. Definitely. All right, man, it's been great. And taxation is theft.
That's right.